Finally, at 8 o'clock in the evening, he entered pleased and satisfied, and said that everything was cleared. How, he would not talk about. On Tuesday noon, she continued, there came a man who looked very uncomfortable out, up at the hotel and asked for George. I was alone inside and asked him to come back the following morning. Before 9 o'clock, he was safest to meet. I wanted to meet him today. I'll wait here outside, he said and went out. It came over me an uncomfortable feeling that this was not all well. I waited that George would come back, because we had planned to eat dinner together, but now he did. I went out in the reading room to read in a magazine. This man was still standing in the hallway, as if he stood on guard. At last came Georg, but immediately after he entered, this unpleasant man also came in. Sorry for bothering, he said politely, but I have orders from the police chief to ask the Iron Master immediately appear at the police. I saw that George paled, but he replied very calmly, I'm just ready to follow you, if you want to wait a moment out there. He went and George whispered in my ear, telegraph immediately to Brajur that he comes here with the first train. Only he can help me. What is it? I asked in the most dreadful anxiety. I have committed an indiscretion, but it will probably be okay. Just be calm. Further, I did not know, and so he joined the detective. I asked to come along, but the officer refused. Then I sent off the telegram. I went to the detective office on Mingretan and asked for my husband. He's in for interrogation, questioning. Here, was answered. The wife can of course sit down for so long. And there I sat in a tormenting uncertainty and anxiety. Finally he came out pale and upset. I am arrested, he said, but must undergo another hearing tomorrow at 12. Until then, Berger, hopefully will, be here. He shall save me. What is it? May I not know what it is? I cried in despair, but received no response. He was taken away between two constables. I sank down on a chair. They got a cab and I went back to the hotel. Zero God, such a night I had. So it is today the hearing shall be held? I asked. Yes, at 12 noon. She is now 2:30. Let's run directly to the detective office. And was now calm again filled. I say as George, this will probably be okay. I'm beginning to understand how this is connected together. When we arrived, I asked about a conversation with the manager and the police. Well, the merchant came just as he was after sent. Then we can begin the interrogation immediately. Bring in the detainee Milner, he told a guard soldier. An unpleasant case, very uncomfortable, he added in a low tone. It was an extremely embarrassing moment when we met before the bar of justice, examination, bench, but I manned me up and adopted an untroubled countenance when I handed Georg hand. After some formalities, the policeman took up a bill of exchange, which he showed me. May I ask, have you written this merchant acceptance? Sure, I replied immediately, without a moment's hesitation. That is my name and I stand by it. George gave me a look that I shall never forget. The policeman looked very surprised. Oh, is it really so? It was strange, for it is not like your usual signature. How do you know my signature, if I may ask? The police know much, he said, with a certain sense of self-confident. Look, he added, holding out a letter from me to the office, with which I had my business relationships. Yes. Here I have also written, I said, but my name sign can surely be little different. Yes, it seems like that, he said with an ironic smile. If so is the case, the matter is cleared and must be written off. It was then only a sad mistake. I apologize, but you gentlemen must admit that it looked strange and suspicious. Never I have seen gratitude to shine such like, in a pair of eyes which was those of Gunhild's, when I helped her into the carriage. And never have I seen such a great and sincere repentance, as George shone, when we came up to the hotel. He had had a bill to pay, but thought all would be okay in the last moment, but he had had no time to arrange the matter. Had perhaps also difficult for it, and so he resorted to the insane resort, to write my name as acceptor. He had always meant to write and tell me, and in any case he was sure that to the due date, be himself able to redeem the bond, bill, but how the forgery was discovered, he could not comprehend. Then I got the explanation, when I shortly thereafter went up to the office, where my letter was addressed. The firm's head was in fact also a member of the bank board, and there, he had come to see the bill. He thought that the signature looked suspicious and sent for one of my letters. Undeniably, the similarity was very small, but George had been in his usual thoughtlessness and thought that it probably was not that important, and that no one would detect it. The main thing was to get a solid name. And then came the disaster. Georg had in the hearing insisted that the name was genuine, all in the hope that I would arrive in time and save him. But the horror of what he had gone through and what he had been close to, was so overwhelming that he was shaken by violent chills and had to occupy the bed. There appeared a violent fever, and he lay for nearly 1 week dangerously ill. I stayed with him until the crisis was over, and he began to regain strength. When I came home and told her everything that I had not wanted to entrust by the letter, Martha took me in her arms and thanked me so warmly, as if it were herself I helped. "Now you have fulfilled my dream," she said, "and therefore I think you made a more important action than we now understand." "Yes, it is possible," I replied, "but there is also something else that must be met, and it's the bill itself." "Do you not think he can do it himself?" "It's possible, but we must always be prepared to the contrary." "Yes, it will probably be a solution or right way for that matter. You will see that the help will probably come in one way or another. Now I think that old man, I dreamed about, is as happy as I am. Thank you, my own Berger." 17. Sunset. It was a complete revolution, this event caused in my friend's entire mental and emotional life. It made him, so to speak, back on track. Against Gunhild he became the tenderest man, who since had the fullest confidence and always took her advice in all important matters. To me, he was an open, cordial and good friend, and his gratitude was so great that I literally was plagued thereof. When his business, he was punctual and proper. In short, he became like a reverse hand. It was the great real balance of it, which was becoming a terrible accident. But the purely financial side of things got pretty worrying. How confident he considered himself to be, and how much effort he made to honor his bill, he did not succeed. The rumor of what appeared had leaked out, even if the newspapers had not got wind of it, and his credit was then to end. I was prepared for it and had planned for the cause by taking another mortgage in our little property, which I, after a few vain attempts, finally succeeded in placing at high interest rate, and thus redeemed the bill. Georg was heartbroken, but could do nothing. His business position was now so undermined that he wanted to sell the mill to resettle down as a music teacher in the capital. But it was not easy to find a buyer who could pay what was needed to avoid bankruptcy. And it came to bankruptcy, and the consequent forced sale got many to suffer considerable losses. As such were things standing, when a year later, it came a letter from the Gunhild about the main building of the mill had burnt to the ground. It was in late summer. How the fire occurred was not ascertained, probably some crack in the chimney stalk in the attic, for there started the fire. In a quarter stood the entire roof in flames, and soon after the fire broke out in all the windows in the upper floor. It was not to think about saving more than themselves and little clothes. After a few hours the entire old venerable building, a glowing ash heap from where the dilapidated chimney walls were sticking up like ghastly ghosts. It was a heartbreaking letter, written shortly after the disaster. Now bankruptcy was inevitable. Our friends were completely destitute. An uncle of Gunhild, her parents were dead and had not left behind anything, and in them the moment a helping hand, so that they could undertake the move to Stockholm, where they were renting a small apartment with 3 rooms and kitchen. Kurt was now 12 years. He had to share a room with his father, and Gunilla, who was 10 years, was in the same room as the mother. The third room was both dining room and classrooms, and there were the finest piece of furniture, a rented piano. This would give Georg chances to give music lessons and singing lessons. The problem was only to find gather himself till he got started and a few students. I did at this time quite often business trips to Stockholm, and then always visited my old friends. It was touching to see, with what heroism, they wore their ordeal. Especially Gunhild was admirable. She, who had been brought up in so much ostentation and luxury, now sat there like a poor wife, who herself has to do all the work indoors, because no servant was afforded to acquire. It made pain in me, when I saw how she had to drag, but she carried her head high and always had a smile on his lips and a kind word for everyone. "Do not think that I'm unhappy, Berger," she said once, when I could not repress the regret. We sat face to face and to her major distress. God knows how long we otherwise tried to stay together with the misery and how many more things could make suffering on us. I think I never felt so light of heart, as when I moved into these three rooms and thanks to Uncle's goodness had to get together these simple furniture. Now all should probably be very fine. Shall you see? George is so skillful in teaching, and now he has been the open and nice with all people. This he never was before, when he dreamed to become something big. And he is so full of hope and want to do everything to get work. He's already had the first, on an ad, he had a couple of students. It's not much, it drew a light veil of sadness over her face and a tear glistening in her eye, but it will probably be several. And there was more. He soon got so many students, as he could keep up. He was cheap, and the less wealthy sought out to him. Even in violin, he had a couple of students, he could play almost all instruments. In addition, he composed waltzes and vocal pieces, and it contributed a little to his, our income. A couple of years later, they already could rent a bigger apartment, and now they thought they had it really good. I perceive that my story most come to move on my friends George and Gunhild, but their path was of course also between severe problems, when our own floated like a smooth and quiet stream. Martha was always warm in life, a giving sunbeam in our little home, despite her, with every year, fell off and became thinner. Her limbs were so dilute as a 16-year girl, and her skin pale and translucent, but her eyes had still the magical splendor and breathtaking tenderness, that from the first moment captivated me. Our small household, we were still single, occupied her not much, but the time, I was busy with my work. She was sharing between caring for my mother, who was now very old and decrepit, and reading. She was very fond of legends and mysterious stories. Bulwer was her dearest author. In addition, she devoted much attention to the care of the city's poor. She was the soul of a sewing circle, which she passed to get clothes for poor school children. One evening a week gathered, in turn from one of the participants, and when the tour came to us, I sat inside and read aloud to the ladies. But the quiet happiness I enjoyed could not be prolonged. I saw Martha eventually faded away and thought with trepidation at the moment when she would leave me. She had probably also a presentiment of that she could not have far back, and let slip out sometimes a hint that it would be hard to part from me. But by no means was she afraid to die, rather I think the idea for her had something enticing, and in her dreams, she was often a guest in the country, located on the other side. She would sometimes wake up with such a clear feeling that she had seen and spoken with beings with white robes, and with a radiant halo on their face, she heard some heavenly music or fancy wandered in a region of such great beauty, that it could not belong to earth. Then her face lit as explained, and the good eyes shone with an unearthly splendor. The last summer she was alive, we had not dared to undertake any trip to the west coast, which we otherwise often used to, but had rented a small farm not far from the city. There, on the west-facing open veranda, overlooking a long valley, we sat usually by the trees and watched the sunset. She enjoyed so indescribably of the clouds' play of colors and the warm glow, which was cast over the landscape, as the sun sank. "How beautiful it can be to die," she said once, "to be put on a purple cloud bed and carried away, far away, where no human eye can penetrate." "Are you going again to leave me?" I asked. "The inevitable to happen. My small role here on earth is outplayed, then I know all too well, but up there waiting for me, is a new life with new tasks, and my greatest, my happiest shall be to watch over you and wait and long for the time I get fetch you home to me. Yes, the one that could only have a perception of you, but I'm not as sensitive as you. I neither hear or see. I feel terribly alone. That you should not be. I must tell you that I had a pretty strong presentiment of what it will be for you, while I'm away. Well, what have you seen or perceived? I have a very great trust in your hunches. They have so often struck. There is one, as you hold much of. She should come here and make life bright for you. You mean Gunhild? Well, who else? How can you think such a thing? She is bound. But even if she were free, I would not be willing or able to put in question such a thing. In this case, I have no faith in your sensations. And yet I say unto you, Berger, I have two specific times seen her walking around here in our home. The first time I saw her leaning over you, where you were sitting at your desk, she kept her hand on your shoulder and looked so happy. The second time I saw her walking alone in the courtroom and watched the plans, then saw the hair slightly graying out, which I interpret as, it was a picture of her in the future. I still do not believe you. But tell me, you knew well the pain at these sensations? No. I felt it just good. I got the impression that she made the home bright for you. I've always kept so much of Gunhild, but the last time I saw her like that, I felt that she was so good, I could not help but go against her and take her in her arms. She was so real to me, that it occurred to me other than that it was she herself alive. But the vision disappeared, and I stood there alone and stretched my arms towards the empty air. How strange you are with your visions, but as I said, in this case, you have probably seen wrong, and I'm almost sorry that you talked about it for me. I really have hesitated if I should do it, but I've never had a secret thought for yourself. How can you ask me that I should keep quiet about it that moved you so close? And I also had an intention, therefore I would ask you to take care of Gunhild, she would need it. And it would not pain you, if... No, I will not talk about such an absurdity. The thought pains me not now, and then I am certain of, that it even less to do it then. It was not long before she was put on the sick bed, where she no longer arise. She faded away slowly without plagues, without any particular organic suffering. It was as the oil on the lamp would end, and therefore it must go out. I sat beside her as often as I could, holding her little translucent hand and looked into the dear lovely eyes, which became brighter, the more life slipped away. Last night I've dreamed so beautiful, she said one of the last days. You were already up there? I asked. No, it was probably on earth, I believe. I found that I heard it in the forest with cows and sheep. And the sun shone so warm and bumblebees and flies buzzed and bark where bell rang and the sheep small bells rang and I went and blew in wait to attract them, for it was early evening and we were home. But when I came to a clearing in the woods, I met a young knight. He was so beautiful with gambling blue eyes. His hair was cut short in the pan, but fell in bright curls on both sides of the face. On each view that he had a black samet spiret, with a white feather in hand. Well, how he incidentally was dressed, I do not know, because I just saw on his face, that beautiful face. When he saw me, he smiled and stretched out both arms. Here, he said, will not have any front, which does not provide tax. I have nothing to give, I said, and I felt myself blushing all the way up to the hairline. Then you need to give yourself, he said, and embraced me and kissed me so hard that I woke up. So, you are out on adventures with such fine gentlemen, I said jokingly. Yes, that's fine gentleman apostrophe. Do you know who it was? No. It was quite clear to me, when I woke up. It was you. It was her last dream. 2 days later she was gone. 18. Sunset glow, what have I to say about the life that now for me was so empty, so gray and worthless? I took care of my business, I was sitting in my office, I made small travel, could almost mechanically, but the sun had gone down, it was cold and dark and desolate around me. My mother died the year after Martha, but last year she was so lethargic that she sometimes barely recognized me. However, it became empty without her. She had been so good to both Martha and me. I was now all alone. The thought Martha had once developed ran me sometimes to mind, but the just tormented me. Never, never would become a reality. So went 1 year. Then came a telegram. Georg died in the night. Come, pray Gunhild, is it possible? Young man. I had not heard that he was sick. The same evening I traveled by night train to Stockholm. There he lay with a touch of peace over the pale features, the dear, tried friend. He had fought out. A paralysis of the heart had stopped bloodstream, and life had fled. It had happened so fast, he wailed in the night and wanted to get up, but fell back in bed, and it was the end. Gunhild was crippled by grief and could hardly produce more than single words. There was something stuck in her face, almost scared me. The children sat crying in a corner. It was a sad sight, when I came into the small home. I took Gunhild's hand and watched her faithfully in the eyes. You dear friend. Death has been hard on you, so it has been so much kinder to him there, when I took Honam so gently, without disease, without plagues. Let's not forget it. Yes. Yes. But it's so hard to understand that he could. Ouch. It hurts so much here. She first held hands on her heart, and then she laid both arms around my neck and fell into a severe crying. Previously, she had not come up with a tear, but now the bands were broken and she was crying out. I stayed in Stockholm and arranged the funeral. But when I was going home, the thought struck me. How are these people going to survive? George had supplied some money to the family through his lessons. Gunhild had managed the household and the home and had not been able to contribute to their livelihood. Now she stood there with empty hands. I left her a small sum for the near future and promised soon to return to try and arrange something for her. Alone, she stood and alone I stood. It is then easy to understand how it was possible to Marta's vision yet finally became a reality. His wife Martha had short before her death had a vision where she saw that he would find and help also Gunhild after Martha herself was gone. She brought her children with her to care for my house, and so soon became my wife. I shall not dwell on the inner struggles. It cost me to get to the bottom with myself, before I took this step. It was natural that the daily intimate intercourse between us, which had always been best feelings for each other, would eventually lead to the idea of a union, and I think this idea soon woke in us both. But it was as if we both struggled some against it and no one would say the final word on it. And it did not need to be said, we read each other's thoughts, and one day when the atmosphere became overpowering, Gunhild stretched out her arms to me, I brought her to me, and she was mine. Again the fortune smiled at me, and I was happy in the feeling that Gunhild was happy. But for long would we not enjoy this pleasure? Care and disease laid its heavy hand upon us. I had the last few years had to struggle with serious financial difficulties, but always at the last minute, found a way out, and thus kept it going. The business was eventually in decline. It was no longer as productive as before. I had to lay off one of my assistants and tended so almost everything myself. Then came a severe crisis. And I had no other alternative than bankruptcy. I felt it hard, most for Gunhild's sake, if she once again should have to go through such a heavy testing, but there was no choice. I had made the most strenuous efforts to keep it going, but in vain. My credit was over, now the heavy blow had to hit us. Gunhild was during this crisis far more strong inside the soul and hopeful than I was. She still held up our spirit. And she also became the saving angel. One day when I sad and depressed was sitting at my desk in the office, she came and having a registered letter in her hand. Saved! She exclaimed, handing me the letter. It was from Gunhild's uncle and contained no less than 10,000 kr. And also the very kindest remarks about my person. Remember that this amount is probably for time now equivalent to nearly a million. R. Dotto. Remark. Gunhild now confessed that she had written to his uncle and told the whole story of George's frivolous handling with the exchange, and how I had intervened and saved him. We had mutually promised each other that this story should not be spoken of to any person, but after a short battle with her misgivings, she had, without saying a word about it to me, given the uncle a part of it and also talked about our critical situation. This had moved the old man so much that he, who was very wealthy and had no more heirs than Gunhild and the cousin of hers, now sent this amount to us as the heritage Gunhild one day should have. So we were once again rescued. And so she had done, my lovely wife, who was always strong, through the storms of raging adversity. how heavy she felt about the trials and burdens on her shoulders. Now she was particularly pleased and happy that she thus was able to repay what she felt like an old debt. So went to time during the comparatively peaceful external environment and the safe, domestic happiness, which is built on mutual affection and confidence, but now came a disease. I had felt certain heaviness in the abdomen, but did not place much thought on it initially, and it did not particularly bother me, but eventually entered some worrying symptoms, which prompted me to seek medical advice. I underwent a thorough examination which showed that it was a cancerous lump, tumor, that were already quite large. I had to choose between an operation of dubious output and a disease, which result was no doubt, but that could also go for a long time and for now would not stop me in my work. Gunhild was deeply saddened and dared not give me any advice. She otherwise always knew what she wanted and was quick to advise. But when I chose the latter option, I saw that it drew a relief over her face. So can I, however, be with you still some time and care for you as best I can, she said. Thank you for not taking the option to loose you right now. I was now a doomed man. How long I had left, no one could tell me. It could go fast but it could also be long. It is strange how the certainty of a soon coming death can paralyze a man who still has forces in reserve. So great is the love of life, the certainty of its loss will corrode not only life itself, but also of courage and zeal. And yet I had to tell me that many who were healthier than I would die before me. But this had not the thrill of certainty that the end came. The weeks turned into months, stirring the uncomfortable feeling that the enemy of life, which I carry within me, still grew in size and stature. I soon could not walk and move without the greatest difficulty, and finally I had to occupy the bed. I cannot think back to that time, but with heartfelt gratitude, remembering the doting care Gunhild devoted myself. She was indefatigable in her kind attentions, and not only did she care for my sick body, she was even more my spiritual doctor. With her firm belief in a continuation of life in the other world, she was the one that sustained my courage, when it often came close to wobble under the double burden of suffering and death's certainty. Although I know that she was about to succumb to fatigue and grief, she could at my sickbed have a freshness and confidence that made me forget the pain and powerlessness. She was always the tense spring that sustained my sinking courage. And her children. Why have not I talked more about them? They were so unspeakably tender to me. Kurt was now 18 years old and was in the highest class, a handsome boy, who had inherited her mother's beautiful, expressive eyes, but of course brought to life one for all suffering beings, compassionate heart. Gunilla was 16, a blonde and gentle little girl who crept on tiptoe into the hearts of all. How often did she not come with fresh flowers and laid them on the table? One evening, when it was toward the end, Gunhild was sitting as usual at the bedside, sewing. Suddenly, she looked surprised about. What was it, my friend? I asked. It was so strange, she replied. I thought I felt Martha glimpsing by, past. It was as if she had come from the hall. She stopped for a moment by the bed and then she disappeared. Did you not see her? No, I've never any sensation of that kind, as she herself so often had. She must have come to fetch me. It was so strange, I got such a strong feeling that it was her. Did she say anything? No, but she made a gesture with her hand as if she said hello to me, and I felt as if she wanted to thank me. She surely would, and I also. I handed her my emaciated hand which she caressing took between her two. Yes, Berger, when we meet again up there, so be very clear, that now seems so dim. You should greet them both, who have gone before us. Say to George, I never forgot him, even if I with joy and gratitude, though are looking back now on those years, I have stood by your side. Many times I wondered, that I from the first moment we met, could keep in touch like we were old friends, and that I, at the same time could, give my heart to take it all the way to George. Life is full of mysteries, but sometime, they probably be solved. Her words died away, they were heard as speaking in the distance. I had this strange feeling that something snapped inside me. It went around for my eyes. I fell into a swoon. A few clicks and it was over. Chapter 19. Epilogue: the first sensation I had after crossing the border was the muffled sound of a violin.